So welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Welcome, welcome. And a lot of you listeners know that the feminine is rising up to rebalance the patriarchy. Or maybe if I were to be cheeky, I'd say to overturn the patriarchy. But I don't think we want to live in that kind of duality anymore. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I have a wonderful guest today, Karen Tate. And Karen, you're a reverend, and you are the, what would you call yourself? You're like the minister, but I think of you as a goddess. You're one who teaches goddess work, and you teach the evolution of the goddess into her place in this patriarchal society, but you also have a radio show. So introduce yourself, your church, and...
Okay. Well, Veronica, you're way too kind calling me a goddess. I think that should be reserved for beings higher than me. But, you know, I am, you know, in some circles would call me a priestess.
Right.
Because, you know, we are trying to reclaim these feminine labels of empowerment and spirituality. But to the mainstream world, you know, the only way they probably understand what I do is to say I'm a minister or, you know what I mean? Because it's, you'd be surprised how many folks out there who don't really know about goddess spirituality don't know we have legal clergy. You know, those of us who marry and bury and, you know, do baby blessings and house blessings. And, you know, they're there when people are on their, you know, on their last in hospice and or in the hospital. And so, you know, we may be a little different, but we're very alike in some ways as well.
But you're actually ministering a full church or a spiritual community, are you not?
Well, I'm independent.
Okay.
I'm invited to go guest minister at a lot of different places. You'll see me pop up probably most often at the Goddess Temple down in Orange County in Irvine. You know, I'm closely associated with them on, you know, a number of different levels. But you know, I don't have my own brick and mortar church, you know, with a congregation. There, unfortunately, you know, I think there some time has to pass before we, you know, have those brick and mortar goddess churches on every corner, you know, like we do the other main religions. We're sort of at the phase where Christianity was in the beginning, you know, where, you know, women were in charge of their house church.
Well, you know something, Karen, I want to say this, that I think it's wonderful that you've been detethered in a way, or that you are detethered, because I think from everything I've read, and, you know, I'm an intuitive and so on, and that the vibrations are changing on the planet. Things are moving up in the universes and on the planet. And they say a lot of us will not be as hanging on to a place of earth and, as you called it, mortar and brick. We would be in our, like they did in the time of Christ, in the time of the women, they were, wherever they were was what it was, really.
Well, you know, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, also, you know, we don't need this authoritarian, organized religion either. You know, that's one thing about the sacred feminine is it's much more egalitarian. It's much more about shared leadership, you know, or that's the goal anyway. You know, some women, you know, still sort of buy into that patriarchal paradigm and perpetuate it. But others of us, you know, are trying to elevate us and move us on to the next level because, you know, patriarchy such that it is, you know, they want to have power and control. And, you know, they've set things up that, you know, the congregation needs a minister to be the conduit to deity. But, you know, we don't really believe that. You know, we believe
You know what, honey? I never believed that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we all have our individual connection, and maybe some of us are leaders for one reason or another, but, you know, you can certainly get by without us. You know, you're not going to be godless or goddessless if you're not going to a brick-and-mortar church.
I know, it's really interesting because we're trying to evolve, and one of the things, I'm trying to get the actual name of your book. I don't mean to be ignorant, but I've been bouncing around trying to get the computer to work. So tell them the name of your book, because it's a wonderful, I want to tell everybody, this is a wonderful book, and it really got me going.
Oh, thank you, Veronica. Well, I think you're probably talking about goddess calling, inspirational messages and meditations of sacred feminine liberation theology. Now, I know that's a mouthful, but really what it's simply saying is the spirituality of goddess really sets us free from oppression, you know?
Right.
It sets us free from oppression and inequality. And I apologize for that phone ringing. you know, it puts us on a different path because, you know, patriarchy has been about exploitation, oppression, inequality. And, you know, I think we all want a new normal. We're really done with that.
I wonder if that was the patriarchy phoning in.
You know, it could have been. I'm going to turn that phone off so we don't get disturbed again. Usually this phone never rings, but we are dead today, aren't we?
I think that one of the things Karen wrote about in this book, Goddess Calling, because you're saying God is calling and now the phone is ringing.
And it was one of my goddess friends.
is that when things go wrong, we learn that that's where a learning curve exists, right? In this case, maybe it's turning off the phone, but in another way, it could be like punctuating God is calling, you know,
well, you know
it comes through.
There it is. It's in big red letters, God is calling. but, you know, that is true. You know, I've found in my life that's probably some of the most difficult challenges I've gone through have been the most significant learning lessons. And of course, it's hard while you're going through it.
But we think we're being punished a lot, and it's not that way, is it?
I don't think so. You know, I don't. You know, in the early days before I came to this revelation, I might have gone there in my thinking. But it's really all about, are we going to be reactive or proactive? Are we going to, you know, what are we going to get out of this challenge?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to know why you became wait a second, you used a word that's not theologist, theologist?
Well, that's the feminine version of the word. You see, theology is the teachings of God, the masculine.
Right.
But theology are the teachings of goddess, the feminine. So it's really just a gender tense in the word.
I like that. So how did you get into this? Who are you, Karen?
Well, Veronica, probably nobody's more surprised than me and my family that I'm in this. They're still worried I'm going to burn in hell.
Were you Catholic?
I was born Catholic in New Orleans, Louisiana, in the middle of the Bible Belt, if you can believe that. And let me tell you, they didn't talk about goddess in the Bible Belt. I didn't even know about feminism. I didn't know about sexism. I hate to say it, I was a rube. And, you know, I didn't even know I should be concerned about all the things I'm concerned about now because we lived in this little bubble. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, there again, that helps me remember as we're trying to educate people that people can be brought along, you know, people can be educated.
You know? And you would understand the fears and why people keep things closed, right?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Not that it's not frustrating, but I think better understand that fear. But I moved to California and that just sort of opened.
That'll do it.
That opened everything up. But, you know, I have to admit, you know, I think goddess was waiting for me to awaken even in Louisiana because I didn't quite fit in with everybody there either. I was into metaphysics. I was interested in ancient cultures. I was just so enamored with the idea of Egypt and, you know, these exotic locales. And, you know, I have to say Catholicism or Christianity never really got its hooks in me. Hmm. I even teased my mother often before she passed away that I asked her, I said, are you sure gypsies didn't leave me in a basket on the doorstep and you just kindly took me in or something? But, you know, I moved to California and suddenly I've discovered the goddess Isis, you know, the Egyptian goddess, and it was a slippery slope for me. From there on out, I never looked back. It really sort of shaped my life. And at first, it was about what goddess spirituality, how that empowers women. But as I evolved and grew, I started to realize that the values of the sacred feminine are what's missing from society. And if we reinstate those values, we can save the world.
And were you conscious of, for example, I don't know your age, but were you conscious of the like 60s revolution, evolution, or were you a protester at all? Were you conscious of political inequities and so on before you moved to California?
Well, I'll answer that two ways. I regret that I was not old enough to be protesting in the 60s. I feel like I would have fit right in with those foremost.
You sure would have.
we're trying to do our part now, you know. And when I came to California, no, I didn't know about all of this. And it wasn't until I was probably into goddess spirituality a few years, I saw the political and social aspects of the sacred feminine. You know, at first it's just about a woman discovering, yes, she is also created in the image of deity. And that's very empowering because then you find out, well, you were never intended to be a second-class citizen, subservient to men and you know, his helpmate. You were intended to be equal, you know. Mm-hmm. So that changes everything, really, you know, and then as I progressed, you know, I started connecting more and more dots, and I really believe that you can make a direct connection between losing a feminine face of God and why women still have to endure men telling them what they can and can't do with their bodies, or why we only make 80 cents on the dollar, you know. Mm. Those sorts of things.
Yeah, I love parts of your book are so incredibly beautifully political. Let's get into that in a little bit. I have a curiosity here. Can you tell people what Isis represents? What kind of energies and consciousness does she embody? And I have something I want to question right after that.
Well, you know, Isis, an Egyptian goddess, she was, scholars say she was such a beloved goddess in ancient times. Her worship spread outside of Egypt into the Mediterranean, went as far north as Ireland and England, into Turkey. Some say her worship even went along the Silk Road into China. I mean, it was everywhere because they believed she was a goddess that heard your prayers, who could understand your suffering. There's so much about her that I think speaks to humanity today. You know, she's a wonderful mother, a healer. Her and her partner Osiris is a great love story there. So there's, you know, the story of partnership. She was a single mother at one point in her life. So, you know, she's a role model or, someone, you know, that a single mother could look to and not feel shamed, you know. Mm-hmm. Some have single mothers feel shamed. She was a widow at some point in her life, and we know widows are vulnerable in patriarchal society. There's so much she offers, but especially female leadership. You know, her symbol is the throne. I don't know how much more you want me to go on about.
Well, here's something I question. You know, people say lately, they'll say, well, it is what it is. And then we've got Isis out there. I'm like, what is in the metaphorical, the meaning of the names? It's so rich and deep, you know?
Oh, you're talking about the terrorist group ISIS?
Yeah.
Oh.
And the fact that people say it is what it is. And I go, it's all is ISIS.
You know, I don't know what that means. It is what it is. But, you know, those of us who know ISIS as a goddess that goes back thousands and thousands of years, we were very troubled the way the media would latch on to this terrorist group, the acronym. And right now, it's something about Islamic State, IS. I don't know what the entire acronym, it's not coming to me right now. But, really it should be ISIL, ISIL, but they just latched on to ISIS. And, you know, silly people would say to people like me, well, why don't you just change your goddess's name?
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so much ignorance out there, but
you know, there's something I question here, Karen, which is that I don't like to be paranoid, but sometimes I think there's an insidious plotting and planning that goes on, maybe subconsciously or in the more negative polarity of our consciousness, that would bring that forward and use it that way, you see.
Oh, you mean to demonize a power?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time because...
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, all through history, powerful women have been demonized. You see what the Greeks and the Romans did to Cleopatra. You see how Lilith, you know, because she wanted to be Adam's equal, she was demonized. You know, the label of queen is demonized. You know, we think of the evil queen. You know, women in so many cases are demonized. Look at Eve. Look at Pandora.
Right.
I don't think patriarchy likes powerful women very much. And
that's
they are,
what I started to think was going on out there. That's why they chose that, probably, only not consciously.
Right? Well, you know what? That's a good point, and you may very well be right. I guess I didn't give them that much credit, but maybe I should.
I don't know if that's credit. I think that's the manipulation and power stuff at a baser level. But I don't want to get into that. It's just I wanted to throw that at you because I muse over that quite a bit.
I'm glad you did, because now you have me thinking about it just a little bit different.
And we are powerful. I know that. I loved your book because I felt so darn powerful. Oh, my goodness. So keep going. And you also use that quote from the Dalai Lama that it's the Western woman that's going to
save the world.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to admit, you know, I have mixed emotions about that quote, you know, Western women would save the world. At first, I was elated, as were so many women, that such a powerful spiritual figure that was not part of the, you know, as you'd say, maybe the traditional three, you know, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity was given such power to women. But I started realizing when I thought about it a little bit more, you know, when I got beyond just the surface of it, while it was a compliment, I think that leaves out so many indigenous women who have, you know, who have been speaking about the wisdom of the earth for so long, and they've been, you know, relegated as, you know, as if they're insignificant. Also, too, and this is very important, I think we have to remember this movement, these values, all women don't hold these values. It's, you know, we don't automatically believe these things because we share a womb or we share a vagina, you know, because look at women who perpetuate the patriarchy, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so what I really think, you know, now when I talk about that, I say, you know, it's sacred. I think the Dalai Lama more accurately could have said it would be sacred feminine values that would save the world, because there's too many men out there who are our allies, who get this, who are feminists,
yeah,
you know, who want the same thing we're fighting for. So,
And a lot of the men that I work with, really, they long for the rebalance, you know.
Yes.
If there's such a thing as rebalance.
Yeah, they aren't afraid. You know, they want, I think, equal partners. They don't, you know, they're not these little men who have to keep women under their thumb or say stupid things like, well, just put an aspirin between your knees, honey. You don't need contraception. You know, don't get me going. I get so with some of these, you know, Neanderthal men, and I don't mean to insult Neanderthals.
Yeah, but the thing is also that the whole power structure holds a respect for all of that. Not respect, has been empowered by that. How about that? People don't necessarily respect it. People laugh at it, make fun of it, but we don't change it.
And I think what's important, too, is some people don't understand that what we're talking about is for men as much as for women. You know, we have so many wonderful male allies out there. And, you know, some men are afraid of this, and they think it's about women wanting to take over the world and subjugate men. But, you know, that's just propaganda, you know, put out by people who don't want things to change and be better.
But one of the things you write about also is how women share, how we work together.
Yes.
Right? And, yes. And so there can't be just a shift from that way of doing it to this way of doing it, because this way is a more of a sharing, and the men is about being a conqueror, I think.
Well, you know, I think men are conditioned in patriarchal society from the time they leave their mother's house and they hit the schoolyard, that it's a pecking order, you know, that it's survival of the fittest. But right. Some of them escape it, you know, some of them, you know, do their best and accomplish being their authentic self, and they don't always want to be dominators. But, you know, patriarchy rewards the dominator, you know, I think, you know, we have this idea that, you know, the person with the most bullets and bombs or the biggest stick, that's what we should be aspiring to. But I don't really think that that's what most people want for the future. In women, you know, while, you know, I want to clarify, you know, I think women have an innate, natural tendency to be the nurturers, the ones who care and share. In fact, there's something even about our eyes that we see more peripherally from men. So we think about how our decisions will affect more people, mm-hmm. where men tend to be a little bit more linear. But, you know, even with that said, you know, I think we have to be honest, because there's not, oftentimes there's not enough solidarity among women. There's what Phyllis Chesler wrote about, women's inhumanity to woman. And I think if women could really ever get it together and really start to support one another, the change would happen so much more quickly.
But don't you think a lot of the inhumanity amongst one another came because we couldn't for thousands of years, it seems, survive without a man. So we kind of hustled and competed for that, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and that's hard to unlearn. And, you know, we're in a patriarchal world. So
exactly.
It's not always easy to dance to your own tune, so to speak, and shift things. But, you know, we have to start somewhere, you know. It's like that lobster pot analogy I think of sometimes. You know, here all of the women are boiling down in the water, and one of us manages to start to crawl out of the pot. And so often, you know, we find that, you know, women will pull her back down into the boiling water. Well, you know, we want to shift that paradigm, and that one that's, you know, making it out of the top of the pot, getting out of the boiling water, well, she needs to turn around and help pull her sisters out of that boiling water.
Right.
You know, and I think that's part of goddess spirituality too. The, you know, women having better relationships with women, understanding that men are our brothers and our allies, they all are in our enemies, because patriarchy has really hurt men, you know, as well.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
They want something better. We all want a better quality of life.
Well, and I think it's really, your book, Goddess Calling, made me very optimistic in a lot of ways. I went, yeah, because you talked about so many, and you can say this more eloquently and tie it to specific goddess energies, because I take it as energies that are in the consciousness of the species anyway. But we have the ability, don't we, to turn it around and start to really be attuned to the earth and start to be attuned to one another. We have that ability, don't we? The female
we do.
Side of our feminine side of us.
Yeah, I think whether we're men or women, you know, we have to start valuing our tendency to nurture. I think we have to start valuing the idea of caring and sharing rather than, I mean, what do we hear out there? We turn on the news, you know, you hear the Republicans, oh, those lazy takers.
I know, geez.
You know, kids are going to bed hungry. You know, there's more inequality in our country than there's ever been. You know, the statistics say, you know, CEOs make 500 times more than their workers. I mean, I could go on and on with these sorts of statistics, but it's so out of balance. And, you know,
and you think they would look at it and say, my gosh, this is out of balance.
Well, they look at it and they think they still don't have enough. You know, they don't ask when is enough enough. It's because we value ourselves by our assets, I think, rather than valuing ourselves by How we serve each other, you know, what kind of human being are we? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, more people care about that. And you know, I.
But I you know what? Just to just stop you for one sec, when you say more people care about that, there is that kind of hopelessness that comes up when people really care. They go, oh, but it doesn't go that way. And somewhere in your book, I read, it's like we have to look at that in. And know we can break through. We have to turn ourselves around, right?
You know, I think it takes tenacity. I think when we start to feel discouraged, we have to have faith, mm-hmm. and know that we, you know, we have to be the trailblazers. You know, I talk mm-hmm. about blazing the trail with my pink-handled machete. But I'll tell you. You know what gives me hope? And I know this is political, but, you know, spirituality is political. What's our morality? Yeah. I am so happy and gratified and inspired by the people who are listening to Bernie Sanders.
Oh,
and,
yes.
You know, hearing what he has to say. And they're not buying this fear-mongering that, oh, he's a socialist. You know, they're hearing that he's saying, you know, we need to start taking care of our country and the planet and each other. And, you know, we have to start treating employees right. And this isn't all about the billionaires out there. This isn't right. all about the corporations. We are in this together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the sacred feminine, I mean, I said it in Femme, you know, this documentary I was lucky enough to be in with some of my mentors, Femme, Women Healing the World, you know, that the sacred feminine is about the we and the us, not the I and the me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really it at its simplest form.
Mm-hmm. How's it doing? What do you think?
The Femme or the we and the us?
The actual move. Okay. We've heard for a long time in metaphysics anyway, that the feminine is rising mm-hmm. to take its place, you know? How do you see that? How are we doing?
You know what? I think we are on track.
Yay! I like
you know,
that.
I am not, you know, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that some days it's not two steps forward and one step back, but I think we are on track. You know, I just came back from the Council for the Parliament of World Religions. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest interfaith gathering of people from 50 different religions. And you know what? They were all there talking about these very same issues, getting rid of war, getting rid of hate speech, getting rid of these ideas of, you know, assaulting the environment, about women's equality, about inequality, about,
wow.
you know, and I thought, you know, yeah, we might turn on the news and it feels hopeless, but that is not all that's going on out there.
Yeah, because the news is bought, right?
Yes.
And designed,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that, and that's very important. There's so few outlets out there, and you know, and that's why I do my radio show, and you probably do your radio show, because we need platforms to put different energy out there in the world, different messages out there in the world, because if we only had corporate media talking to us, we would all be hopeless sheep, and you know, it's not going to happen that way. I can tell you, since I've been doing my radio show, I have seen the sacred feminine grow by leaps and bounds.
Yay. How long have you done your show?
Almost 10 years now.
Wow, good.
And, you know, I have had people tell me who are at this longer than I that, you know, when they first started, their lives were threatened for talking about something like the sacred feminine. But you know what? Now the sacred feminine is on the lips of more and more people. You know, I do believe we are in an evolution, and this is what it looks like to live in it every day. Hmm. You know, we don't just wake up and changes at our doorstep. You know, it's the slow slog.
And it's awkward and uncomfortable sometimes.
Yes, yes. But I, you know what? Astrologers I talk to and folks like that, I say give it 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I think 20 years from now, things are going to look very different. They're going to look much better. That paradigm shift, that 100th monkey, mm-hmm. you know, it's gonna turn over.
Mm-hmm. It might take a little while, but I think back to supporting one another. I think it's really important to keep that cheerleading thing going, too.
And, you know, we can all do it in small ways. You know, don't disregard the small things. Right. You know, if we have a neighbor who we know is on Social Security and, you know, her money probably doesn't help her make it to the end of the month, you know, just kind of casually, you know, bring her over a casserole on the 25th of the month, you know, or ask her if she needs you to run an errand for her, or, you know, take that money that you might spend at Starbucks and donate it to a worthy cause. You know, there is really so much we can do if we just sort of, you know, rethink, okay, you know, how can I help somebody else? And I think what we put out comes back to us. And I think we will find when we start doing that, when that becomes our habit, that our lives improve, because I think we not only do we feel better about ourselves, but I think the universe rewards us. It's like it's reciprocity out there. We get what we give.
That's true. The other thing you'd mentioned a little bit earlier in this talk is that you didn't put it in these words, but the value structure of this society has been money. And there are so many other really profound, precious values that actually rise when you do that one helping people or whatever you were examples you were using, you know, really brings it up in us, doesn't it? What we evaluate as important.
I think so. I mean, I can remember as a kid, you know, growing up a Catholic, you know, some of the stuff I remember, and, you know, greed used to be a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know,
greed's
one of the deadly, seven deadly sins or something. And now it's you know, do whatever you want, just don't get caught, you know, kind of a thing. And
I heard something really weird. This is going to sound like a non sequitur, which I don't think it is, but I heard that they're rebuilding the Colosseum here. And what they want to do is shift the acoustics so they can make it so loud in there that it disrupts visiting teams.
Huh.
And you know, I went, people were all talking about, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, you know, it's like, I mean, that so annoys me. What kind of a message is that to give humanity, to give our children? It's okay to cheat, just don't get caught. I mean, look, I don't know if you follow football, but, you know, I'm a New Orleans Saints fan from New Orleans.
Oh, no, and I don't, but that's what it was for.
Yeah, I mean, or Deflategate. I mean, the team that won the Super Bowl last year, I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't think they cheated with the footballs. And, you know, or look at the bank. I mean, that's really huge. You know, look at how the bankers destroyed the economy. Did any of them go to jail? No.
But,
you know, Matt Taibbi, who writes for the Rolling Stone, I'll never forget when he was on Bill Maher one night saying, you know, the bankers don't go to jail for destroying our economy, but a woman who maybe cheats welfare and maybe collects a couple hundred dollars more than she should one month can be arrested and charged with a crime. Right. You know, there's so much craziness out there, and wealthy people are able, they play by a different set of rules, and I think people who are in power will do anything to stay in power, and I think we have to get to the point where that kind of being in the world is really taboo, and say, you know what, we really do want something better. This isn't the kind of world we want anymore. We're sick and tired of it.
And it's not, you know, I think the thing that's becoming clearer and clearer by a lot of people that I know, it isn't necessary. We can do something. I sound like a revolutionary right now, but reading your book got me going.
Yeah.
Because I really believe in all this. I'm like, well, Bush stole the election.
Yes.
Right? And that went over okay.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm like, no, this isn't okay, everybody. We need to start from scratch over some of these levels, and it might be value restructuring.
Well, yeah. I mean, not only did he steal the election, but they lied us into a war. And I think, you know, part of that is the stranglehold that Eisenhower talked about, a Republican, about the stranglehold of the military-industrial complex.
Yes, he warned about that.
You know, look, I tell you, Veronica, I know this might make me sound like a paranoid, but it would not surprise me in the least if one day we found out that ISIS, was started and was funded to keep the military-industrial complex fat and flush.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. Well, remember, oh, here's something interesting. Maybe you know more about it than I do, which is that, you know, they were running cocaine from El Salvador to the CIA was to keep paying their bills.
I heard that, yeah.
And Washington State is apparently suing the CIA for that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well,
I just saw a little blurb. I don't see a whole lot about it, but I'm like, whoa, those are things we should pay attention to.
Yes. You know? And you know what? The mainstream media and, you know, corporate media tries to train people to care about stuff like what the Kardashians are up to instead.
Oh, please.
You know what I mean? It's like the frivolous stuff that
I call it all the Monica Lewinsky. Oh, well, here's another Monica Lewinsky thing. Okay. So let's all worry about a blue dress and forget that they're corrupting
They called it in Rome, you know, this isn't a new thing. In Rome, they called it bread and circuses. And when the Roman emperors didn't want the people to notice what he was doing and uprise, he would just, you know, have more elaborate stuff happen in the Colosseum. And it's bread and circuses. You know, they would entertain the people to distract them, to keep their mind off the things they really ought to be worried about. I mean, it's been going on for thousands of years, and this is just the modern version of it.
But I think the scary part of that is that people think that that means it has to keep going on. Mm. And I think we have to find, and I read this in your book anyway, we need to call in the goddesses. Why don't you tell us which ones to bring? You know what I mean? You really got me fired up as I was reading this.
Well, you know, when I talk about goddesses, I usually talk about them from three different perspectives because I want to reach a wider audience because there's so much here. There's so many layers to the onion. You know, some people may or may not believe that there is something outside ourselves that cares about us. Okay, if you believe that, yes, goddess, she's there. To some other people, I talk about goddesses as role models or archetypes. And then to maybe the agnostic or the atheist, I talk about, well, what do these energies, these goddesses, what values do they represent? So if we want to name goddesses, you know, who represent this fiery spirit to fight back and take back the world, you know, we're talking about the Kalis, the Durgas, you know, of Hinduism. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Morrigan of the Celts. We're talking about Sekhmet, the Egyptian lion-headed goddesses. You know, these are goddesses of strength, tenacity, goddesses.
Fierce, hello.
Fierce, yes. And, you know, patriarchy wants us to have as a role model, you know, the lovely and beloved Mary, you know, the mother of Jesus. Mm-hmm. But, you know, growing up Catholic, you know, she's so benign and passive. But that's what they would rather women emulate, you know.
Right, right, right.
No sexuality, just, you know, nice and obedient and quiet, in service, and that be all you're about. And for how long was that, you know, the way women thought they were supposed to behave? You know, they couldn't be more than teachers or nurses or, watching children. But now, you know, all of that, you know, we're breaking out of all of that. You know, women can be anything. Mm-hmm. And I think seeing these powerful goddesses as role models help us do that. You know, we realize that it's not a bad thing to not be like Mary and instead be like Sekhmet. We realize that's about wholeness, you know.
I went to the Sekhmet place just outside of Las Vegas, the little temple.
Oh, yeah.
And what we were told about it is that it was so toxic from, I guess, nuclear waste or all kinds of really incredibly awful waste. And they put that there and it neutralized. The Sekhmet temple literally neutralized some very, very lethal toxicity. That's what I was told.
That was the intent. And, you know, I don't know if they told you the whole story, but it's very interesting. It won't take me long. Shall I share it with you?
Please, please. But I really wanted to talk about it because of the power you're talking about. So please share. Yeah.
Well, okay. It's it's actually in Indian Springs or Cactus Springs. I don't know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour or something outside Las Vegas. Open to men and women. Please go look at it. Look it up on the internet. But anyway, Sekhmet, the lion-headed Egyptian goddess, she is becoming really an archetype or a role model for women as they become empowered today. And the reason that temple stands out there is because a wealthy woman by the name of Genevieve Vaughn, who was a benefactor in the goddess spirituality community, she went on a trip to Egypt, and she learned about Sekhmet when she was there, because Sekhmet isn't just a warrior goddess. She's a healer and she's a mother. And Genevieve hadn't been able to get pregnant after trying for many years. And she said a prayer to Sekhmet. She said, what do I have to lose, you know? She said to Sekhmet, she said if she would help her get pregnant, she would build her a temple.
Aww. Well, oh, that's a wonderful story. Go ahead.
You can imagine, you know, probably the end of the story. Not only did she get pregnant once, she got pregnant thrice with three daughters over the years.
And all of them named Sekhmet.
No. But, you know, she kept her promise to Sekhmet. And because Sekhmet is a healer goddess, in fact, Sekhmet's son is a patron of doctors, she decided to put the Sekhmet temple on this Shoshone Indian reservation where nuclear testing had been done. And like you said, it was toxic. And they put it there with the idea that it would heal the land. Mm-hmm. And it's been out there for a very, very long time. And it's a place I try to go at least once a year, you know, a pilgrimage site. They do, you know, prayer and ritual, you know, for peace and healing and, you know, all of these wonderful values we need more of in our lives and in society. You know, that's sort of the work they do out there. Wow. They talk about gift economy and peace. And in fact, the priestess who runs the facility, you know, she's very much a peace activist. And you know, some people, if you look up Sekhmet, the lion-headed Egyptian goddess, you will find this one myth, but we believe it's a patriarchal myth. It's a myth where Sekhmet is really little more than a mercenary for her father, Ra. Oh. Well, we think that is a patriarchal distortion aimed at making men afraid of women, and women afraid of their own power.
Uh-huh.
And we really do disregard that patriarchal myth, because Sekhmet is about discernment and strength and courage and healing and motherly love. You know, think of a lioness. You know, she works with the other lionesses in the pack to protect her family. She's playful. She's capable. You know, she's discerning. She doesn't go out there and ruthlessly kill. She only goes out and gets the food she needs to bring back to her family to keep them all, you know, strong and alive. I mean, there's so many good qualities there.
Wow. And is it true that the nuclear waste has neutralized itself? I did hear that several times.
You know, honestly, if they told you that out there, I'm sure it's true.
Okay.
I hadn't think to ask the question, but I don't think that they would try to perpetuate a lie.
Anyway, I think that it does talk about the power of the feminine to overturn the toxicity on this planet.
on so many levels. There's so many levels of toxicity, you know, really.
And we can do it because we're the hand that rocks the cradle, and we're the, uterus of change.
Well, you know, I love that expression. I say it often. You know, not only were we the hands that rock the cradles, but we have the power to, you know, teach those, to change the world, you know, that, you know, we have in our grasp, you know, these tiny beings in these cradles, and they're going to learn at our knee. You know, so we might be rocking the cradles, but it's, you know, the people that grow up and learn from us that are going to, you know, help us change the world.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, do you have children?
You know, I don't. In this lifetime, I have two cats and a husband.
That's not bad. That's a lot of nurturing. But I'm also thinking, children, whether the children are in a cradle or not, we have the ability to step into the world and really make it a growth experience and, you know, helping people find out who they really are, which is one of my big passions, you know.
Yeah, helping people find their authentic self. And I think that's a lot about what the sacred feminine is about. You don't have to fit into these narrow little boxes that patriarchy or some religions would have us all fit into. You know, they tell us who we can love. You know, they tell us, you know, how we should, you know, control our bodies. You know, they, I mean, there's so much hate and divisiveness and ugliness that comes from some religions, not all, you know, of course.
But having all these rules about birth control and stuff and abortion and all that does seem like a big fear of the vagina, doesn't it?
Well, and it's controlling women too. You know, men don't even realize the white, especially if you're a white man. You know, you might not even have the concept of white male privilege. You know, everything is being geared toward serving a man, you know, even religion. You know, this whole idea that man serves God and women, the species on the planet, and the planet serve men. Well, you know what? That isn't working for the most of us.
I think it's funny, actually.
but that's how it's been, though, when you think about it. You know?
And if
somebody comes along and says, well, God demands this, then that makes a lot of people shake in their boots and feel like, well, you know, they have to conform to that ideology. But, you know, the sacred feminine's not about that. I really see the sacred feminine as the great equalizer. Mm-hmm. And so that we have egalitarian societies and we temper this male authoritarian need for control and, because it's really just, you know, again, you know, it's so out of balance.
Well, you know, Karen, I feel a deep sadness as we're talking about this because I know so many women who are kind of exhausted. Mm-hmm. They're underpaid, their kids are struggling, the schools are a mess and so on. And it's just too much for them all. And I go, and we really need to nurture one another into the strength, don't we? We really need to back each other.
I think that's important. You know, that's why I spoke in the early part of our talk about women's solidarity and women's, you know, having better relationships to support one another, and embrace our allies wherever they come from, gender or color they are, we're all on the same page. And, you know, I think we have to take responsibility for our own education, not allow ourselves to be duped. But, you know, I think we're at a critical time right now. And even though we are exhausted, I think we have to find a way to nurture ourselves.
Right.
And I think we, you know, women can't bury their head in the sand when it comes to politics. And I think we have to, you know, not just vote for who our father voted for, because things have changed out there. Mm-hmm. I really think we have to know what's going on out there and be agents of change. And, you know, that's why this has all become about social justice activism for me.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. All the goddesses that you wrote about so beautifully are fierce, loving, supportive, healing, and fierce. Right.
Yes. And, you know, that describes a whole woman. You know, you think, you know, a woman can be caring and sharing and nurturing, but you mess with one of her kids and suddenly she can be ferocious, can't she?
She
You know, that adrenaline starts pumping and she can lift a car if she needs to because mm-hmm. her kid is being smashed beneath. I think there's nothing wrong with women being fierce and assertive, but at the same time, we know how to be loving and nurturing and supportive. You know, it's about us really balancing the masculine and feminine within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And with our men, like, I just want to make sure that we follow what you said earlier, is we must not be divisive because a lot of them are right with us, you know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and men, you know, men are struggling to balance their masculine and feminine within themselves because, you know, they've been taught in this patriarchal society that they're, you know, effeminate or something if they dare be caring and sharing and gentle and kind or compassionate, that, you know, that's weakness. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we don't believe that anymore, you know?
No.
And I think more women are teaching their sons differently and fathers are teaching their sons differently, that we all need to embody these qualities. And,
there's something else, is a lot of little girls are way more powerful when their fathers help build their self-esteem. And it makes me smile. I go, yeah, because there's a role in the hen house for all of it, isn't there? There's a role for the male strength
to support,
you know, and it's very interesting. You have a lot of meditations and things in this book. Can you maybe instruct us or at least tell people a suggested meditation before we end this? Because we only have a few minutes left and I don't want to even hang up on you.
Well, there's a lot of different meditations there that I think help us in different points in our life. There are meditations about coming into wholeness. There's meditations about, you know, healing ourselves, about compassion, transformation. And, you know, I think, you know, about self-love. You know, they're all things that I think we can, you know, it's a tool we can use, you know, to tap into these ideas and these energies that, you know, just, you know, help us, you know, help nurture us, you know, help us be, you know, the best version of ourselves that we can be.
I like that, nurture us, because that is, that word nurture is part of the sacred feminine on a very deep level, because it really strengthens everyone, doesn't it, including ourselves?
Well, it does. You know, you think about the saying, what you nurture and support, it thrives. Mm-hmm. What you neglect, it withers. I mean, that's just across the board, whether you're talking about us as humans or whether you're talking about a plant in your backyard on the porch or
friendships.
Friendships, relationships, everything out there. You know, if we neglect our education, then, you know, we're at the mercy of people who would be predators. I mean, you know, we have to nurture our governments so that we get our democracy back. I mean, we have to, the workplace, you know, I think, you know, the workplace needs work so that employers don't keep feeling like they're entitled to exploit their employees.
Wait, what did you call it? Predator economics? What did
predator, you? Yeah, predator capitalism, predator economics. I mean, look, I don't know about you, Veronica, but when I first entered the workforce, I was just a secretary, and I got vacation, I got health care, I had benefits, I had retirement, and I was just a secretary. I wasn't even upper management.
And that was normal then, wasn't it?
That was normal then, and slowly, slowly, all of this has been, you know, chipped away, and people get no benefits. They got to work 2 and 3 jobs to make enough money to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is so much exploitation out there of workers. It's just incredible. And I keep going back to Bernie Sanders, but I think he has the message to help us, you know, put the country back on track so that it serves the most of us and not just the billionaire class and the rich.
Yeah. And even Warren Buffett said, there's nothing Bernie Sanders says that isn't true. He said, I probably won't vote for him, but he's completely straight up, honest, calling the elephant in the living room what it is. You know, I like that.
You know, people probably are surprised to hear me say I'm going to vote for Bernie and not Hillary. And yes, look, if it comes to voting, you know, for Hillary, I mean, if she gets the nomination, of course I'm going to vote for her and not a Republican ever. You know, but I just feel like with her, it's going to be tinkering around the edges. With Bernie, he's talking about real change, and we have gone so far down the rabbit hole, and things are so out of balance that we need more than tinkering around the edges. And, you know, I don't know of any other way to put it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this show isn't normally about politics, but I want you to remind people at home, who I think are probably all up in arms right now and probably enjoying you very much. But anyway, what we must have solidarity, we must move forward through this election. We must speak up. We must learn about things, right? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, we have to know what the, you know, what the issues are, because, you know, you listen to Republicans, they have so much spin and double talk. It's so easily to fool people, you know, to vote against their economic interest. You know, and I think more than ever, it's crucial now that we actually get out there and be active. We can't just sit on our couch and hope it's all gonna, you know, turn out okay. I think we have to get out there and volunteer. And I know I'm going to be doing it. Even though the media would have you think Bernie Sanders doesn't have a chance, mm-hmm. I honestly think Bernie Sanders is going to get Republicans and Democrats to vote for him. That's how he has kept his seat in the Senate for so long in his state, because he appeals to common sense Republicans as well as Democrats. And I think he's going to have the majority behind him, even though, you know, the mainstream media would, you know, they're just shoving Hillary down our throat.
Yeah, because, but she's a part of that corporate system. That's the only thing I don't like about that.
Yes.
But also, I just want to say one other thing is when we women are listening to the marketed media, we can get afraid. And when we're afraid, our intuition doesn't work too well. And our intuition is what's going to guide us to nurture.
I'm glad you said that, you know, because everything out there is geared toward making us afraid. And when we're afraid, we tend to make bad decisions. And, you know,
or no decision.
Or no decision. Yeah, we become inactive, or right. we look for that, you know, that knight on the white horse to save us kind mm-hmm. of a mentality, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think when we start to be afraid, we have to just sort of detach from the thing that is feeding us the fear, and sort of take a deep breath and check in with ourselves and find the courage within to do the thing that our intuition tells us is the right thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I keep going back to this, you know, but the media keeps saying, oh, Bernie Sanders doesn't have a chance. I think that's propaganda to make us afraid to vote for Bernie Sanders, quite frankly.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people that I consider to be quite wise, and they go, oh, I just love Bernie, but of course he'll never get in. And I'm going, hey, what are we creating here, you guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but tell everybody how to get to your radio show, because I'm going to start listening to you. And
well, there's lots of archives there waiting. My website is KarenTate.com, KarenTate.com. And from there, you can find anything about me, books, talks, upcoming appearances, radio show. But if you want to go straight to the radio show, I'm on Blog Talk Radio. You can go to blogtalk.com, and the search box, just put Karen Tate, Voices of the Sacred Feminine. You will no doubt find my radio show and lots of other interviews I've done with other hosts. And, you know, I invite you to go. You know, there's wonderful things there from activists, scholars, political people, spiritual leaders. You know, I've had the honor of interviewing a lot of incredible folks, and it's my guilty pleasure. What can I say?
Well, I hope you'll come back on Paradigm Shifters with us. Thank you.
Well, I would anytime. Thank you for the opportunity, Veronica. I've really enjoyed speaking to you.
Me too. It's been a delight, Karen, and thank you so much. And goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening. Feedback, veronicaantwistle.com, or Karen's given her information too. All right. Thank you.